Welcome to the Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders.
We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie.
On the second episode of our local series where we interview builders from across southern Alberta, Canada, we chat with Jen McCarthy, owner of Teacup Tiny Homes.
We cover everything from corporate culture and team dynamics to the importance of having high standards in everything you do. Jen also shares some insights about the process required to thrive in the tiny home industry.
Please enjoy our interview with Jen.
Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, guys.
We really appreciate it. For those of our listeners who aren't aware of or don't follow you on social media or know who Teacup Tiny Homes, the company, is, give us a little info about yourself, the company, and kind of how you got started.
I love it. Yes. So my name is Jen McCarthy, and I own Teacup Tiny Homes. We are almost 6 years old, and basically Teacup was created out of a thought that housing needed to be better, and there needed to be a better option. And with that, it was 2015. I was on maternity leave with my son. I was sitting at home. HGTV was on in the background all of the time. And that's where a lot of the tiny home shows were super duper popular. I started looking at those. And as I was out and about in my days, people started saying, "Have you seen that tiny home show? You would be so good at that." I'm like, I know. I thought the same thing. And then another person said it, and I'm like, yes, I know. You're like the third person to tell me that this week. So there was like five people in a week that said, "Have you seen the tiny home show? You would be so good at that." And then I thought, you know what? This is just like a sign, if you look for signs, that I should start doing something like this. A lot of other things happened. There was like with the drywall tariffs and cost to build were going up, and energy efficiency codes were like, there's so much change in 2015. And again, my background being interior design operations for home building and all those things, again, it just looked like people weren't going to be able to live the lives they wanted and just be stuck in either A, the American dream, which I think is outdated and tired, and or B, just paying rent in a crappy basement apartment for the rest of their lives. So with that, and with a huge passion for creating amazing spaces and environments for people to live their life in, Teacup Tiny Homes was born.
Love it.
Yeah.
Going back a little bit, you said you have a background in home design, and how'd that get started?
Yes. So design. I didn't even know what interior design was, I think, until I was in grade 10. So I was born and raised just a small town girl in Milk River, a good old 45 minutes away. And when I was 18, I jumped ship and moved to the big city of Lethbridge, where I have stayed for the last 20 years. So I came up and went to the interior design and merchandising program at the college here. And that was awesome. It was easy. I think I was bored most of the time. I got straight A's, but I think that one of the things there was when you find something that you are completely be interested in, it is so easy to do it. Yeah. So that was something that was really cool. So I went to the interior design program. After that, I came out of the program and I started drafting and design at Milestone Homes, if you guys remember Milestone. And I was there for about 2.5 years, and then I transitioned over to Avonlea, and I spent the next 13 years at Avonlea doing the interior design, moving into more of a middle management role, and then into operations management before then starting Teacup.
So how has that experience kind of helped you? It sounds like from where you've come from to where you are now, all of the life experiences you've had just kind of culminated into this vision, your baby of Teacup. Yeah. So how has it all kind of served? Because I know sometimes, like, I went to school, I took an automotive class, and then I have some other previous life experiences, and going through those experiences when you're in them, like, how is this? I just wasted money on this because I'm not doing it anymore. And then you get back into, you get to where you're at now, you look back and you're like, every single one of those experiences has served what I'm doing now.
Well, Yeah, I am a huge believer in everything is always working out perfectly. Truly, I say that all the time. My team thinks it's ridiculous until, you know, an undermount sink magically shows up at the 11th hour right when we needed it or something like that. And I just always say they laugh at me about that. But that is exactly it. And one thing that I like to teach the team and everyone I work with, actually, probably one of the biggest things that has led me to where I am now is I was a fitness instructor at Good Life Fitness for 9 years before they closed. And I remember being on the stage one day thinking, like, I just freaking love this. How can I do something like this every day? And I remember thinking, maybe I could like be a tour bus driver and be like, and to your left, you have this. And I love entertaining. I love talking. I love motivating people, but I also love design and I know building. So putting all those things together, the fitness instructing taught me how to motivate people and how to, you know, just do one more. And if it's hard and if it feels like you can't keep going on, you can. We can do hard things. And that, I think, led me to thinking more about how can I improve the lives of the people around me every day. So my operations manager, he always says, Jen, not everything's a teaching moment. I'm like, yes, it is though. Yes. Everything is always teaching moment. Yeah. Yeah, actually it is. Okay. So yeah, I believe that every single little thing that you do in life could be applied or added to anything that you're doing at that point in time, period. And I do believe, I mean, I always say I went to business school on Google and YouTube because truly I was taught what I knew about running a home builder in my middle management level at Avonlea. They taught me a ton. I learned from a lot of people there in the industry and being able to apply it here, but there was so much I did not know. Starting Teacup, like you go into it and you think, going to be like this and we're going to do this and you go, holy shit, what was I thinking? This is not at all what I thought it was going to be. So then you just start learning. And I think one of the best tools that are the best, I don't know if it's a personality trait or what, but it's really the fact that if I have a question, then I find the answer and I Google it and I do research and I continue to do research and I never believe that I know enough about anything. So with that applied, I've just continued, like you said, to put those, all the things into that basket and then continually applying them as we move forward. So
the passion, the life experiences, lifelong learning, I think that's really important. People always try to, some people are just stuck in, okay, I know this and I'm not going to learn anymore. But
yeah, with
Google, internet, the last 10, 15 years, we have everything at our fingertips. Via workers and people, but also internet, which is very important. And you can learn a lot from, if you are that type, to be able to watch a video and see how something's done or go on the forums, or like there's so many resources that everybody can access. I think it's good to be able to draw from that and continually learn and better yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I always say you don't need to know how to do it. You just need to know how to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest thing. And one of the questions actually the team asked me a few months ago, they said, how do you retain so much information, whether it's information about the builds or the information about what needs to happen day to day? And I'm like, I don't. I retain nothing. That is my goal. My goal is to not have to remember a damn thing, but to have the systems and the processes set up so that A, I know where to find it, or B, I'm going to like get a trigger or something, like my calendar on my phone or an email from someone else or some kind of automation that makes me go, oh, time to do this thing. So yes, that too. You just need to be able to figure it out.
A little bit different than at home when you've got, you know, different lists of what needs to be done versus a business when you've got materials and different jobs lined up and timelines. That's a lot to remember.
It's
for yourself to be able to kind of help you out and have a system or process in place.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think it's important too that you find really great people to surround yourself with every single day, because truly the success of Teacup has been a lot about, well, obviously the team that's involved. Mm-hmm. So
a question about when you first got started, because you said you were talking or watching those tiny home shows. And so it was kind of starting to become popular. But coming from, like, I don't know how else to say it, like larger scale home building, when you told your peers in that industry that what you were going to do, did you come up against a little bit of adversity or some like naysayers, or was everyone supportive?
Well, I heard a few years ago, actually, from someone in the industry who is a friend of mine. They said, you know, Jen, a lot of people didn't think you'd do this. They didn't think that they thought you're crazy to leave Avonlea. And I was like, huh, really? Well, yeah, that's cool. Okay, well, whatever, right? And I think it comes with, like, trusting yourself. It really doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. So, no, everyone was pretty good. I know some people thought I was crazy. I still get, so how's that little tiny home thing doing? And I'm like, yeah, it's really little. Like,
yeah, like it's a club you're a part of or something.
Yeah, exactly. How's that little, like, I did have a crocheting business at one point in time. I think, you know, it ended up we got too busy with crocheting that I couldn't do it anymore. And hubby was sitting watching the like hockey playoffs and crocheting leg warmers for me because I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Anyway, that was the first test before teacup. We were still crocheting when I started teacup actually. But yeah, going from the big home to the little, people thought, I think I was highly involved in the industry. I knew a lot of people. I was very much, and still am, I know, I mean, a lot of them in home building with the trades and the suppliers and a lot of the guys, guys and girls, but mostly guys, to be honest, they started 20 years ago. They started as plumbers or they started as well, whatever, siding installers or framers or that kind of thing 20 years ago. And so those relationships are some of the guys now that they still, you know, you can pick up the phone, you can call someone and you can say, hey, need help, help me. So the support has been amazing. And I actually don't know if being in a different, well, I would have done it because I know that I will do anything and do it well if I decide I'm going to do it. I don't do things I'm not interested in. But doing it in a different center where I didn't have all the connections and didn't have those really great relationships for the last 20 years, I don't know if it would have been that successful. I think it would have been a lot harder because there was a huge amount of support and everyone did want me to succeed. So whether they thought I would or not, a lot of the time I heard, well, Jen, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be you. So I'm like, is that good or not? Yeah. Awesome. But no, it's been really good. And yeah, I still have a ton of those relationships.
That's cool.
In town. So
can you describe kind of the process or maybe like the first year of doing that first tiny home and like, was it exciting, stressful, frustrating?
Oh my God. Yeah. I think I have PTSD from it. Like actually though. So we're now trying to figure out kind of a new, offering. And I have like these thoughts of what am I doing? Why don't we just stay with what we at least know how to do now? Mm-hmm. The first one was a ton of figuring out the industry, the tiny home industry itself has come a long way. And 6 years ago, there's a ton of stuff on YouTube, but there was nothing really saying what to do. So it was ultimately just like, I don't know if this is right or wrong. Let's just try it and go. And there was a lot of figuring out. I remember getting phone calls from the guy who was kind of overseeing construction. He phoned and he's like, Jen, I found like 3 inches. I told them, do not cover anything up. Like if there is a space, if there is a 2-inch gap anywhere, I want to see it before we decide if we're going to finish over it or if we're going to leave it exposed or what we're going to do. Like just, it was such a different mindset because literally every 2 inches mattered. Mm-hmm. So I would drive over, take a look, then we'd decide if we would leave it open as like a little cookie tray spot or something like that. I don't even know. Or we're like, you could put socks in there. Yeah. You could put underwear in there. That'd be amazing. Leave it open. So that in itself was interesting. The mechanicals and the trailer was definitely the hardest part. Mm-hmm. I know actually on our first one, we did have water issues after the clients moved into it. I know exactly why. I know exactly where. And yeah, I saw some pictures and someone reached out again here probably just 6 months ago on the very first one. I'm like, yep, that's exactly what's going on. Knew that was going to happen because of those mistakes. So figuring it out, I hate doing things, and having them not work. That's been a big learning curve too, is just to be okay with the mistakes. Because I don't ever want anyone to get something that doesn't work for them, but it's going to happen. You just need to fix it. So what happened? Let me see. I started quoting the first build 6 years ago in the summer. I had everything estimated, drawn. I'm a draftsman. We learned that in design school. So I drafted the first plan, did all the structural for it. And let's see, started building. The first trailer came in December. I had a conversation with my boss that I had done this and incorporated a company and would eventually, I guess, be moving on in December. In February, the house was pretty much done. We were going to the Home and Garden Show. We dropped the tiny home off at the Home and Garden Show in 2017. And then 3 days later, I found out I was pregnant with my second child. So, yeah, it was.
Like,
so I had
a, great, but.
Yay! Oh. Yeah.
Lots on the plate.
Yeah. Exactly. Lots so I spent the first year of business, like, hormonal and pregnant. And the second year, literally with, like, she was with me. Yeah. She was with me. We'd go to meetings. We'd go look at stuff. And she was right there. And it was, like I said, I think I have some PTSD from that point in time. And a 2.5-year-old trying to build this business. And it was just, it was crazy. So I'm glad it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are now.
Wow. That must be a cool process to go from design to like full build, to watch it, watch your ideas and your designs and different things go from whether it's sketchbook or software to final product rolling out on the trailer.
Yeah, that's probably my most favorite part is framing. And it literally, like, you create a structure that is going down the road. I mean, whether it's a big house or whether it was a Stars home or whether it's a tiny home, you create a structure out of a piece of paper. And I think that that is like the coolest thing.
And you start to see your ideas in the actual physical property of that.
Yeah, in the physical structure. Form. Yeah, mm. It's cool.
When that first one rolled out of the shop, or when the first clients, because you have to, you can build it, but you got to sell it too.
Mm-hmm.
Describe that moment when, let's say you handed them the keys and they moved in, or they send you photos a few months later. Like, what is that
like?
Oh,
man. Well, the first time I took it down the road, I almost puked because I was like, oh, my God.
This is my life behind me.
Well, thank God I wasn't driving at that point in time. Someone else was driving. I was following behind, like, just praying that if anything was going to fly off, it was going to hit me and not someone else, right? So it was fine. And then we did end up taking it actually quite a few places. I did drive that thing around quite a bit. It ended up going to Windermere, to a couple. They're absolutely amazing. And I was so pregnant. Like, when we delivered it, it was literally like, guys, this needs to go. They were waiting on financing to go through to if they could actually get it. It was literally like, we got to take this out like this week or we won't be able to because I'm going to go into labor. So I was so
not having a baby in Windermere.
Huge. Yeah, exactly. I was so huge. And my husband's like, hubby. Yeah. Whatever we call him, husband, blissfully living in sin, unmarried with two children. He is like 6'4" and on a light day, 220 pounds. Like, he's a big dude. So I was huge. And he goes, okay, am I driving? I'm like, no, I must be in control driving this through the Kootenays on my own, yeah. Super pregnant, ready to drop it off. Like, it was hilarious, actually. So I gave it a big hug, and I think I felt relief. Like, oh, okay, whew, that's off the plate. Now we can move on, do the next one, do it better, and then just continue to grow, right? It was kind of like, just get this first one out of the way so that the energy can start flowing again.
And continually evolve and perfect and tweak and fix. Yes. And yeah.
Yes. Just do better next time. It's cool.
Is it like the design part for being able to take it down the road? Is there, like, usually when a house is built, it's on a foundation, on a lot. It isn't mobile. So is there some challenges with being able to complete it and build it in a shop and then take it across Canada or wherever, delivery, like, just with the structural or design aspects?
Yeah. So we are certified. So we have Intertech certification. And that is, so we're technically building to and certified to CSA Z240 RV code or Z241 park model code. And then we have our quality control manual, which is our A277 designation, which technically anyone building a building in a factory and moving it somewhere else or a portion of a building needs to have this certification. So that's really good. What I love about the certifications is that we have someone coming in and double checking what we're doing. Ultimately, we have to do it, but they come in quarterly and just make sure that we're doing our things right. But it also holds us to a higher standard. So that's something that's very important, I feel. One of the problems in the tiny home industry is that people don't know what they're doing. We have backyard builders who think that they should and could and are qualified to do so. And unfortunately, where we have a lot of resistance, it's from municipalities and it is from people who see the backyard builds. I actually just had it confirmed last week from someone in Ontario saying we didn't like tiny homes when the guys were building in their backyards because they would be full of mold, falling apart and parked on the side of the road with a free sign on it basically in a year, just people trying to dump them. So with increased standards has come increased quality. So when you build it to go down the road, we have to have it structurally engineered. We have to have, like, one of the guys that worked here, he said, you build these things like tanks. I'm like, well, yeah, man, like we're going cross country with these things. So a lot of people actually ask us too, what do you do for the wind when it goes down the highway? I'm like, oh, don't you worry about wind. Yeah. Like, we're from Lethbridge. We know exactly how to deal with wind. It's fine. Yeah. So make sure your seams are lapping the right way on the siding. But yeah, actually funny little story, super funny. One of our show homes was getting delivered to Ontario and the driver, he had delivered one or two for us from that point in time, but he phoned us and he said, so little problem, the hitch broke. I'm like, what? What do you mean? He goes, well, the ball, it just like popped off the hitch. Like it was a warranty problem with the hitch on the truck. I'm like, okay. Is everything okay? He's like, yeah, actually, I just need to tell you, but the safety chains caught it and it hit the back of his truck and just one corner board of smart board popped off and that was it. Wow. And so we're like, okay, cool. Homeowner's good. Yeah, you got it there. Yeah. So I think he dropped it on the 401, near Toronto there. And yeah, he said it was fine. And the homeowner to this day, she's like, yeah, nope, nothing happened. So I'm like, okay, you could drop it on the highway and it's fine. Good.
We're building them good.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was kind of funny.
So you're talking about Toronto. What's the furthest or what kind of reach does Teacup have? As far as, because the TV shows are that's international. Mm-hmm. How far away has the furthest one gone, or like where's the most popular kind of areas for them?
Yeah, for sure. So for us, our market, and we do market to more of like a higher end build. So people in Lethbridge and Southern Alberta, they aren't really not everyone, but I mean most people.
Yeah.
Here, like you can still buy a house on the north side for what, probably 300 grand now, maybe, or 280 or something like that. So, and that's with the lot. But because we have that higher end, our largest market is definitely Ontario. Second is BC. Third is Alberta. We have built one. Is it Wasilla, Alaska? Is that a place? I think so. Anyway, we've had one go to Alaska. We have one in Whitehorse right now. Northern Ontario, we've done a few for there, usually more so Southern Ontario areas. And then like the island, we have a few on the island and lower mainland and that kind of thing.
Are they more primary residents or would it be like a, like
cabin or cottage? Yeah. Yeah. So we mostly are primary residents, but, a lot more cabin and cottage are starting to happen and they are really the perfect use for cabins and cottages. Like it's the perfect solution. So
when you're talking about higher standards and listing off all the standards that you follow, can you speak a little bit to how important it is for someone such as yourself or someone in any sort of building industry to be like humble enough to kind of be checked by outside sources and not say, listen, like I know what I'm doing. Like, you know what I mean? That whole process.
Yeah. I think that if you think you know everything, it will be a hard lesson to learn when you realize you don't. The people that do the best are the ones that know that you're growing every day. And if you're not growing every day, then, well, you're going the opposite, right? You're stagnant or you're dying. Let's just say if you're not growing, you're dying. So I truly believe that because I do not feel like I ever know what I'm doing, really, like it's the imposter syndrome and as business owners, you talk about it all the time. And, And I have way more confidence than I used to. As far as design goes and how to make things look beautiful, yes, I can absolutely do that. As far as knowing, and I think one of the things that made me a very good designer and still makes me a good designer is that I do understand construction. I know how your top plates need to be run to sit on the stud and the sill and the all like all the things and all the words and how to put it together. Mm-hmm. That's something that a lot of designers don't have. So that has been huge. Understanding mechanicals, electrical, that kind of thing, that has grown too. And that has helped with the overall design, because as soon as you change something mechanically, especially in a tiny home, you're changing the build. You're changing where the sticks have to go to. So that has been a huge learning curve. But I also believe someone said to me, a mentor of mine a few months ago said, have you ever hired anyone better than you? And I was like, oh, actually, I don't know. I mean, better in what capacity? Yes, I've hired lots of people that are better at construction. I haven't necessarily ever hired someone who's better at the like administrative operational side or design side. And he said, how did that make you feel? I'm like, actually, a huge amount of relief. Like, okay, I don't have to just figure this out on my own all the time. Yeah. So yes, I believe that there's huge power in knowing that you don't know anything, and things change too fast, right? The only thing constant in life is change. So there's no way you can keep up with it if you decide to stop. Like, there's just no way. So
you probably have codes and different things with trailers. Like, would codes for these tiny homes be similar to a house being built that are constantly changing electrical things like that? Or is it?
Yeah. Like, I actually get a weekly code update that comes into the email. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they're little things, and a lot of things, because we build, I think I was going to pull that all down right there. Yeah.
My book got lost. Stuck.
Yeah. With the code changes, we are building so far above code that a lot of the time it's stuff that we're already doing anyway. So we keep an eye out for it. It's pretty good. Everyone here and all our even trade partners that we still use and our suppliers, we have like the highest of integrity. So I think that we're already doing a lot of things. But yeah, you got to keep watching. One big change was they actually took lofts out of park models. So there was time frame. Yeah. They were talking about it. And then in the December, I believe, of 2018, then it kind of transitioned where the code came in. So really, there are so many tiny homes that were 10 feet wide that were just no longer applicable. You just couldn't do it because they had the lofts. So that was a really big one for sure.
It speaks volumes with being higher, like a higher standard, higher quality. Your sub trades, the workers in the shop, them knowing that, you know, your integrity of we are building a high quality, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that go baseline, maybe even try and fudge a few things, and now you have to stay up with these codes. But if you're higher, I think that speaks volumes on the business end, and for your clients and people looking at potentially getting into these, that you know that they're getting into a good product, that it's not just a, you know, mid-level. And I'm sure there's people that maybe make more affordable ones, but I think there's something to be said about being that higher standard of excellence and expecting your workers and sub-trades, everybody's on the same page to be able to know that this is a good product and we're going to stand behind it. And we're building it to the best that we can.
Yes, hugely. And having the team as we bring people in, it's a different way. We have a gentleman right now who came from manufacturing here, like local mobile homes and home building and stuff. And really, they're all about time. And we were talking about this the other day, and we really don't always hit our projected timelines, to be honest. But hey, that's the beautiful thing about scheduling and project management is you set a target knowing that A, B, C, D, E, F, G, like all the things are going to happen and come into play. But we might be a little back on our timelines as long as obviously the cost is reflective of us knowing that. But it is all about making sure it's done right. And there have been some conversations, like the guys last week, we moved a window. They put the window in where the plan said it needed to go over the toilet. And they learned my little, we'll call them Jen-isms or something like that, where it's like, okay, the toilet needs to be centered on 30 inches and the window needs to be centered on that 30 inches. So regardless of where the window is drawn, you go off the stack for the toilet and you put the window there. They're like, why are we putting a window in where the toilet? I'm like, cause that's the way it needs to be. Okay. And if it's wrong, we're moving one or the other. So, little things like that, easier to change. Like there was one where we had a bookshelf come in and we're standing there and it was like 6 inches too short. It was a bookshelf that was going in front of a freestanding tub, clawfoot tub, underneath a window. And so it wasn't centered. It didn't go kind of all the way to the end. It looked wrong to me. It wouldn't have necessarily looked wrong to the homeowner, but I'm like, no, I cannot feel good about sending this out with this being 6 inches short. I see it. It needs to be redone. So took it out, added to it, changed it a little bit. Basically they pulled the cabinet apart and then just put in the longer shelves. Thank God. And, I'm like, okay, now it's good. So,
there's one thing from designing it in the software or sketching it out. And then when you actually go to build it, there's discrepancies and visually the aesthetics. It's easy to, you know, stick with your codes and measurements on paper or software. But then when you see it,
yeah,
that's a whole nother beast of, you know what? I think, like you said, right, centering the toilet, making sure everything, because there's a lot of, you go into a lot of houses where the window's not centered to the sink and you're like, oh, this it's like 10 or 12 inches off. And you're like, maybe people don't pick up on that. But for myself and lots of others, you're kind of like, how come either the sink box should be moved over, the window, just those little things that probably don't take a ton of time that make it just a better product.
It does when you have to redo it. Yeah. And usually it's not caught. True. Yeah, exactly. So then when like our sink, the sink is a big one because we have so many mechanicals that have to run together. And we have tin in the floor. We have the ABS and we have the windows. All the things that go in, we're literally laying out the cabinet. We're doing the cabinet markout when the trailer comes in, like bare trailer, because we have to make sure that everything is in the right spot. And if we miss it by half an inch, if we miss it by 2 inches, like we're screwed. We're redesigning the kitchen. So
they've got a water pipe coming up the floor.
It's really hard to run ductwork under a P-trap, right? Yes. So when you only have like 8 inches to do it.
Yeah.
So all of these things, it's a completely different mindset. So one thing we look at too with the windows, and that is a big one for me, is how do you get everything centered on this window? So sometimes we're centering it on a pane of glass. Sometimes we absolutely can't because we have structural framing that has to be in here and we just simply can't move it. Something as simple as your range hood vents to vent it outside. Like those are some of the things that we're like, how does a stud end up in the middle of this every goddamn time? And like every time. So we have to cut it out, header it off, like bear it properly down onto the trailer. It's like, again, it's the funniest little things that get us. But if you don't get them right, and if we aren't all looking at it, then it totally, it changes the aesthetic. And I always say people don't know why well-designed homes or well-designed plans or well-designed buildings, the average person doesn't know why they feel amazing. They don't know what they're seeing. But it's these small details when you walk in, if you don't get them right, it will change the client experience. And again, the person walking in or the person seeing it, they're not going to know right off the bat. They aren't necessarily going to be able to tell that the pendant doesn't line up with the faucet or something like that. They won't know that. All they'll know is something isn't quite right. And it's that emotion and it's that vibe that you give off when you're building anything, that if you don't get those little details right, like I say, you're not going to get that full high vibe emotion that you're trying to communicate in the space.
So it's really cool to hear that, like obviously every business tries to put the customer first, but you're trying to provide them with like a next level experience. And with the standards of quality that you hold you and yourself and your company to, have you seen, like, have there been any interactions with homeowners that they would prefer your stuff versus other people just because of that, like whether it would separate you by your competitors by a little bit or by a lot, like they prefer this because they know that it's going to come out perfect?
Yeah, definitely. Like the, I think we call it likability, I suppose. But one of the things that I've done over the years, like I get asked quite a bit by people in Lethbridge, like, how did you even get into the Ontario market? I'm like, honestly, Instagram. And as funny as it is there were pictures of my 2-month-old baby on the floor while I'm trying to do AutoCAD and like figure out how the hell to build this tiny home that someone wants or whatever. But the, it's, it's about us. It's about the culture, and the corporate culture is so big. And that's something that, again, going back to the fitness classes, that was how I figured out how to transition what I loved about fitness instructing and teaching into corporations. I started doing it at Avonlea, where I started to do more like meetings with the team and a little bit more of the motivation, inspiration. This is why we do it. And focusing on that, and then integrating that into Teacup. So I think one of the biggest things too with instead of maybe trying to grow further or stay where I was longer, was that I wanted to create a culture that was a reflection of everything that I believe in. And that reflection, I think we've done really good. People say they love working here. I mean, even if they decide to go elsewhere, they just say, no, we love it here. And it was just simply a matter of whatever that they decide to move on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been really, really neat. And that culture, it's not only important within the four walls of what we're building, but it's so important and is very well, I think, communicated to the public and the people who are buying. So yeah, we definitely have raving fans all over.
That's awesome.
Super cool.
So you touched on that motivation piece. I know on your Instagram, you're always posting things like not even just home related, but just motivational. Really, you can tell that that's a passion that you have. And so do you have, is that like a side project that you like to do? Like I know you probably go around and speak different places and lead, I think you do a course too or something like that. So if you want to talk about that a little bit and how that kind of feeds into what you're doing?
Yeah. So I did. I think this is really funny because I see this pattern now and I see it in myself and I saw it in myself at like this 3-year point of being a business owner. I think you get like kind of bored where you're like, okay, this is kind of functioning pretty well. I'm not really sure. Like we're kind of waiting for it to go here. And then you create a distraction for yourself. So no, I've done a ton of, I fully believe in, I guess, personal growth and development. Obviously, I think that is the only way to go through life. And I have invested in myself in a ton of ways over the years by doing a ton of different courses. So with that, I did actually have a mentorship program a few years ago, which was amazing and fun and awesome. But also, I believe it was a distraction from where we wanted to be here at Teacup. So with that, it did transition out. But again, a lot of those systems, a lot of the course that I had created, a lot of that, I apply it or try to apply it to the team. The difference is when it's a course is people are coming to you because they want to learn and grow. And then if you have the people that you have on your team that aren't ready to learn and grow or maybe aren't ready to in that capacity, that's sometimes where I see them moving on their own or not quite connecting or not feeling like it's for them, which is really cool. Because I think that you can give everyone the tools to learn or to do a certain thing, but if they're not ready for it or if they just can't yet, it'll come back to them. I do believe like maybe decades, maybe years, whoever later, and they go, oh, that's what she was talking about. So if I can help create those little moments in people's lives where maybe it's 20 years down the road and they go, oh, now I know what Jen was saying, I think that's super cool too.
Motivation, even with you talking of the company, the team, you know, taking the window out and having the team look at it, you seem very much involved. You involve the whole team as a whole instead of, okay, well, my framer or my exterior person is doing this, so I'm just going to sit down with him or her. But you're talking about the team. It seems like the culture in here is, even just from talking for 38 minutes, I always feel like there's a good, really good culture and team mentality and everybody's involved. And it's not just you're doing this, I'm here, I'm going to make the call. Seems really inviting and a great place to be.
Yeah, I think it's hard for some people too, actually, sometimes where people have come from, say, like unions or from bigger corporations or that kind of thing. I think it is a little bit trickier for them to fit in because I do expect, actually, this book I'm reading, Maverick by Ricardo Semler, it's really cool. What he believed in is just doing business differently. And I love this book. And while I'm reading it, I'm like, cool. We do a lot of that already, which I really, really like. And one of the things he says is why, like, we have people on our teams who are out there and they're adults. They're being adults. They're being dads. They're being moms. They're being paying bills, they're managing their lives, and they're doing that just fine. So why is it when they walk through this door and they come to work and they show up at 8 o'clock, then why do you expect them to be children asking permission to go to the bathroom and take a coffee break? And why, like, you, they're asking, and you, if it's set up poorly, they're asking their managers to make decisions for them, or they're unable to make those judgment calls. So one of the things with that is, like, you guys are adults. You know what to do. Like, whether it's a disagreement or whatever, like, let's be an adult about it, and let's do that. And it's hard. It's hard for people that have not come from that environment to kind of adapt it and go, oh, wait, I'm not going to get in trouble if I make the wrong decision. I'm like, you guys, I made a $9,000 mistake before 9 o'clock this morning. Yeah, give me a break. Okay. Yeah. Like, but you can do that. It's your company. I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to. Yeah. So whatever, you live, you learn.
Yeah.
Sounds very empowering too.
Try to be.
And like, yeah, make mistakes. But it's interesting. I can relate to what you're saying about coming from, I don't know, would you call it like a toxic culture, maybe in some cases?
Absolutely. I think it's a tired way of doing business. Yeah. But the largest corporations, the unions, that kind of thing within, yeah. I mean, there's a few that are doing really well. Actually, I think one of the companies that I look at that I know are doing things differently is actually Southland Trailers. And I do have a history with them a little bit. But yeah, what the boys have done there, they've done amazing, what I see from the outside, what I see from where they were 10 years ago. So that is a company in town that I feel is really making an effort to do it differently. And they are quite large as well.
Yeah, that's really cool, because I think, yeah, it's just, maybe it's like a societal thing. Maybe it's entrenched in our values, but it's kind of always the way we've done it, right? We have this pecking order. Yeah. We have, okay, but then that gives them an excuse not to grow and try either. Because if I'm not going to do this because that's his responsibility or her responsibility, right? And I don't need, that's not my job or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so I love that your model of, and you could tell, like, we're in her office and there's all these business books all over the place. And
my half dying plant.
You can tell where your passion lies, and it's really refreshing, actually, just coming in from the outside and seeing that, because it's so weird. It works well, obviously, but why is it so rare?
Yeah,
you know, this formula of putting people first and empowering people instead of you just holding all the knowledge and doling it out as you see
directing,
fit.
Yeah,
and I liked how you said, you know, why do we expect them to be children at work? Like, I've never thought about it like that before.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. I mean, my kids, I try to, they're 7 and 4 now, but like the things that they can do when they're just, when you don't hover over them, and it's the same thing, like, and trying to teaching the team too, like, you know where to find this. Have you looked here? Like at this point, they know what's happening on the shop floor more than I do. I said that this morning. I'm like, hey, keep going. I don't know, you guys. Like, I don't know how you need to lap the siding. You do, though. You've done this multiple times before. So, you know, figure it out. And as long as you can justify the decision, if something goes wrong, something goes wrong. Yeah. I believe that to always pull the trigger at 80%, I kind of have the mindset of, actually, another friend of mine said this, you know, you push the shopping cart down the hill and you run like hell to try and catch it. Like, that's a big entrepreneur thing. I have another good friend of mine, business owner, and we were laughing the other day because he says he is so much more analytical than I am. And he's asking me all these questions. I'm like, dude, I don't know. I'll give you my shit and you can figure it out for me. And then tell me what it is. Yeah. I'm more just like, let's go run. Yeah. And he's like, okay, the trajectory of this, if I hit it at this kilometer an hour, then I'll bounce off the curb at this and I'll get down. And we were laughing about it, how analytical he is. And he said, yeah, but you know what? Your shopping cart's going to get to the bottom faster. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to be thinking about it. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly it. And I do believe that that is a quality too, of being able to pull the trigger when you don't really 100% know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Half the time, I don't know what the hell is going to happen, but I do know that it needs to happen because it aligns with who we are and to move forward.
Taking risks for the sake of the good of the project, right?
Yeah, and sometimes it's simply going out there and be like, okay, guys, this is what's going on. I'm stressed. You've done nothing. do we got this? Are we together? Can we do this? And they're like, Jen, whatever. Don't even worry about that. Because the things that I worry about, they're like, what? That's dumb. Like, don't even worry about that. Like, it's fine. We'll fix it. I love the people here. I absolutely love them. And as we grow and as we change and as people come and go and that kind of thing, as long as you have that, as long as I can, you know, send them off into the world on their own and they can kind of take a little bit of teacup with them, I think that that's really cool too.
Even not giving them the, like you said, you mentioned the answers or something. Have you looked into this? Have you like, I feel like lots of times different jobs, it's, you know, if you have a question, you go ask it and then it's just do this and then you go on. But your mindset, you're like, hey, have you looked into this? Have you done, like, tell me what you've done before I, whether I know the answer or not, there's some steps to be able to kind of think critically and build those problem solving skills.
Exactly. Yeah. What is it? I don't know. Teach the man to fish. He'll never go. I don't know. You know, something about teaching a man to fish. That's
give,
all.
Give a man a fish. He'll eat for a day. Teach a man to fish. He'll eat for his life.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. And that's so huge. How did you come to the solution? Like, and one of the things with the team, when you go back and we were talking about the PTSD from the first one that I built, like I had no idea. I had the littlest amount of trailer manufacturing knowledge. I had a ton of home building knowledge and I've owned an RV for the majority of my life and I've been camping a lot. Okay, cool. So I have those things going for me. Now I literally had to figure out everything. Mm-hmm. And so like if I can do it, they can do it. I also do think when I get into some situations where I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? I'm like, hang on. Lots stupider of people in this planet have figured this shit out. I can do it too. Okay, let's go. And then we rally and we move forward.
Yeah, a little pep talk.
Yeah,
I think exactly. There's a big kind of going with what you were talking about and Jen, what you touched on before. It seems like there's a big like stay in your lane mentality too, right? Well, that's not really your area. Mm-hmm. Like I've come up against that in previous positions too, in jobs and whatever. It's like, well, why are you, and I even in what I do now, it's like, why are you asking that? Well, what do you mean? Why am I asking that? Well, that's not your job. It's not your, that's theirs or that's his or hers or whatever. But I think it's really interesting what you talked about as far as, you know, empowering people and getting them to the point where they're not afraid anymore to reach out and to ask questions and to not just be like, well, I don't know if I should mention that. Like someone who has a better idea of doing something, like, I don't want to talk to my boss about that because that's their job. And, you know, questioning them. Like you could tell that's not even a thought around here.
Well, the kind of how it can be it awesome and then kind of one of the like not so awesome, I guess, parts of it is then we've had to actually have conversations and talk about like take it to this person. Like this is your lead. So our framing lead, for example, if you're talking about framing, you don't go ask everyone. You don't go ask the mechanical guy because two, when we're always looking at it and trying to come up with solutions, then obviously that takes time. So what we were finding is sometimes we'd walk out onto the shop floor and there would be like six, you know, everybody basically huddling, trying to figure out how to run, again, the tin around the P-trap or something like that. And we're like, what are you guys doing? Like, we are so far behind. Yeah. This is supposed to be done. Spray foam's coming in the morning. What are we doing here? Like, you can't... And also having them think, like, I try to teach them also. We actually have bi-weekly meetings, team meetings. 3 o'clock, we shut her down. We come in and we talk about things like, hey, financials. And I don't know if it's way over some of their head or if they really want to know if it provokes another thought. But they're, if they understand some of the business behind it, then I think that that will also help them make better decisions. So I really love when people ask a question. I always ask, why do you want to know? Well, I'm just curious about this. Oh, interesting. Because if they want to change something, again, we'll stick with the P-trap and the tin in the floor. If they want to change something there, because it's going to drastically change how, I don't know, we do the plumbing final or something, who knows, then that's super, super duper cool. And you always want them to be talking about it. Yet at the same time, we have to have, and this is part of the certification is that we have times to implement change. So one thing we're working on doing right now to kind of avoid everyone standing around a circle trying to figure out the best way to do something is like every 6 months we review and they fill out a form so that it's like, here's the idea. It's almost like a suggestion box, but we can't continually change the way we do things. Otherwise, if we get a home where there is a warranty or service call, they call in and we're like, shit, how are we doing this then? And did we run the wire here? Who did this? And you're just questioning. So as far as like, again, client experience, and that's not fun for the client at the end of the day, if we're changing things too much. And if we have too many opinions, then it can be detrimental. So it is really this fine line of encouraging, but yet let's do it in an orderly fashion, I guess.
Not to mention 10 people worth of salary.
Oh my God.
Try to solve. Can you add up the amount of money that's being spent right now?
Just exactly. Like, sometimes I walk out, my eyes twitching. They're like, what's wrong? I'm like, I'm not winking at you, but you guys need to get back to work, please.
Probably good to, like, with those team meetings and stuff, just building upon that culture and having, whether it's over their head for financial stuff. But I mean, you know, when you're young or whatever, you're starting a job, you in here, right? Oh, I'll cut 5 2x4s too short, throw them in the pile. Over a year, especially now when they're 10, 11 bucks of a footer, like you don't see that, or whether it's sandpaper.
Yeah.
Like there's so many little things that when they understand the cost of this, because lots of times if it's not your company or you're not invested, you make a mistake or use something, this piece of sandpaper, you do that, throw it in the garbage for the entire year. What does that look like for down the road? We've spent so much for on wastage stuff.
Yeah.
So having them, you know, whether it's over their head right now, but having just that little bit of accountability even, or, this stuff costs money, so mistakes happen, but let's try and limit the amount of waste.
Yeah, totally. Lean building practices. Yeah, it's that is when they're invested and when they truly want to do the best. And I think that's for all of us. And then we can start to see and recognize those things. But that is a really big thing. One of them was like our skylight flashing kits, actually. And it was one of the things where for years it was going on where they were actually tossing the flashing kits that we got. And we had no idea until one of the guys, because we had a subcontractor coming in and doing it, and it didn't quite fit. So they were actually fabricating their own flashing kit to go around the skylight. And so however many of these things, I don't even know. One day one of our guys just heard us talking as he was walking down the hallway about an issue with a leak, and we were trying to figure out where the heck it was. And he goes, I just threw one of those out. I'm like, sorry, what now? You just threw out a flashing kit? I'm like, they're $360. What? Why are we throwing them out? He goes, well, there were a whole bunch sitting around. Like, they don't use them. I'm like, if we're not using them, can someone please tell me so I can stop ordering them? Because, like, years of doing this. And first of all, why in the actual H are we not using them? Like, can we just go a little bit further here? So it's those things, too. Sometimes the best learning opportunities for the team, for us, are when, like, it's like, what the actual hell is going on? How are we doing this? In those moments where you're like, wow, we just dumped a shitload of money into the bin.
That's how it's always been done. I just throw it out.
I don't know. It was here. I don't know why. I don't know why he doesn't use it. I'm like, lucky
they're not asking you to order three of those kits and tossing all three of them.
Yeah.
Well, it was really funny, actually. Just kind of like shake your head. And then, I mean, little things too, like a lot of trades and just in the industry, you have a box, you're unwrapping something, you throw the garbage in the box, right? Well, here in a matter of like a few months last summer, I think we tossed out like this $280 smart control for our HRV unit, and we couldn't find them. We're like, where are they going? So then we had to implement a rule where we no longer use boxes as garbage cans because so many small parts were going missing. And like, sure, maybe we hadn't installed it yet, but they see a little bit of trash, and then the plumber comes in after and throws his in there, and then he wants to, you know, do us a favor, just clean up after himself, and he takes all of it to the bin. So then why are we using boxes as garbage cans? Well, we don't have enough garbage cans. Okay.
There's
we will
problem.
Go buy $360 worth of garbage cans from God knows where right now. And you guys are never using another box.
It's already paid for from that one box you emptied that had $800 worth of electronics
plus
in
shipping.
It.
Yeah.
Let's just back it up here a little bit.
So
just to kind of close a couple more questions, but if someone who's looking into getting into the construction industry or even interior design or CAD, what type of skill sets do you think, I mean, you could be general for all trades, but what type of skill sets do you think are the most important that people need starting out?
Yeah.
Or even business, whatever.
Totally. I think that, and even when we advertise, we say we hire on character, and if you know how to do stuff, then good. But you can learn how to do anything. You can learn how to do anything. And having that growth mindset is the number one thing. So entering into whatever you decide to do, just knowing that you will learn. And even if you take one little itty bitty tidbit of information away every single day, that will add up to being a huge bucket full of skill and talent that you will be hired and paid for going into the future. I know a lot of people have very creative minds and other people maybe don't are more like analytical or that sort of thing, right? But there are pros to all of those. And I believe that regardless of who you think you are, if you don't think you're a creative person, then, and maybe it's so funny, people who are accountants, like you have to be so creative when you put numbers together too. There's creativity across the board. So just knowing that it doesn't matter who you think you are now. If you want to go and do something, then do it because you will become that person. Going into the trades, if you can learn how to use power tools, know what they are for, and then start understanding just how things go together. So if that means just simply building something or YouTubing it, or even maybe start with a bench, just so you can see how, just like how you cut things, how this goes together here and how to put it together. Start small, and then eventually it's all the same. It's all the same process. It doesn't matter if it's really plumbing or electrical or framing, to figure it out, the flow, and figure out how things go together. That's a really important skill to have. And then it's just practice. Yeah.
Now, what about tools? Like top three starting out tools. Now, this might be more whether it's design or in the shop.
Well, okay, this is a big one right now. One of the biggest things that I run into issues with is people who are skilled trades don't know how to use the computer and don't know how to use or do the administrative side. So the cell phone is actually one of our biggest assets and our biggest tools that we use here, because we have a project management app that the team uses.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So on here, all your spec selections and what the client has picked, it's all live. The schedule, everything is on the phone.
Wow.
We upload photos, we show it there. So if you got to know how to use a phone. At this point in time, if anyone's young, they're going to know how. So it's kind of funny when we put must be computer literate in an ad. If we get a younger generation coming in, they'll be like, oh, I'm not very computer literate. It's like, yeah, but you're fine.
Yeah.
You're at my level. Yeah. You're fine. You know, you grew up with it. But then if you get someone older, even let's say 40s coming in and they've been on the tools their whole life, the chance of them knowing how to use those programs, it's going to be more difficult for them. So that is a really big one. Let's see, saws, knowing to cut things, being good with a saw, skill saw. My operations manager, production manager here, he uses skill saw for everything. He has a framing background. So one of the things with the skill saw, efficiency, that is the word, is that you bring the saw to the pile. You don't take the pile to the saw. Mm-hmm. So in framing, he'll be so, if he hears me say this, he's going to be so proud of me today. No, but in framing, like he did framing on site in large houses. He actually framed some of the Stars homes for me, for example. But he's like, you're not going to be pulling a table saw out of your truck or your trailer every day to set it up on site to be doing these cuts. Learn how to use your skill saw. Because as a business owner, we need to look for efficiency. The less steps you take, if you have a step counter and you're like, I win, I got 20,000 steps today, I'm going to be looking at you thinking, how inefficient is this person? Because you need to be taking the least amount of steps absolutely possible to get your job done, because steps waste time. So to watch him frame a tiny home, which he has done multiple, like it's almost the dance of how efficient he is. He's cutting a block and he knows that this block over here that he cut off, it's waste of, I don't know. Well, usually we have like 10 foot walls or 10 or 11 foot walls. So we're always cutting studs. And he knows that all of his pile of this length are here, and then all the pile on the other length. So if he needs one, he's walking over here with a 2x4, cutting it. He's nailing it in place. He's grabbing a block. He's walking back over here. Like, every step has a purpose. So the more effective and efficient that you can be as a trade, or even just starting to think that way, the more money you'll make and the more beneficial it'll be, whether you're kind of self-employed or whether you are working for someone else. Understanding and seeing efficiency is going to be huge. And that goes to if you're doing AutoCAD or Revit and you're drafting and design, is when you're drawing plans, it can take you 3 weeks or it can take you 3 days. And it all depends on how you figure out how to do it as best as you can in the least amount of time. And I think that is one of the absolute biggest things in the trades, is that efficiency mindset.
I like it.
We're 59 minutes and 42 seconds. We hit an hour. Exactly. Jen, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show today. You can tell you're so passionate about what you do, and you're excited to share your story, share your insights, and just kind of inspire others. And that's what the whole podcast is about. So thank you so much. Before we go, where can people find you, and what would you like to promote?
Yes, for sure. So Instagram is the big one where you see what's going on day to day. And we are just at Teacup Tiny Homes. And our website has a ton of information. You can get a hold of us there, teacuptinyhomes.com, and check it out. A lot of good stuff.
Right on. Thank you so much again for coming on the show. Thanks, Hoff.
Thanks, Rosie.
And we'll catch you guys on the next one.